Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
More than a million people live in America's prisons. More than a third of the inmates released return to prison within 3 years. There's a patchwork of services designed to break this cycle of recidivism, training, education, support programs. But David Freudberg of the Humankind Public Radio series tells us about a different approach, healing the heart.
Research has shown that reducing recidivism makes our communities safer and saves taxpayer money. But rehabilitation professionals ask, why did this population end up incarcerated in the first place? Robin Kasarjian, a counselor and educator based in the Boston area, has spent decades addressing that question.
It could be any of a variety of traumatic experiences, of being abused by a parent, being abandoned, growing up in a violent neighborhood, put down because you had learning problems, say, that weren't addressed.
Childhood trauma is disturbingly common among prisoners, says Kasarjian. Many later get caught up in addiction, from opioids to alcohol. People living with mental illness, especially those who are poor, are far likelier to land in jail than in a hospital. And as Nazgul Gandnoush explains on Radio Milwaukee, the 1970s and 80s further expanded mass incarceration in America.
We had policies that dramatically increased the likelihood of going to prison and the prison terms that people would serve.
She's the co-director of research at the Sentencing Project in Washington.
And it was disproportionately people of color, and in particular African-American men, that were impacted by these policies. So when you look nationwide now at this point, African-Americans are imprisoned at 5 times the rate of whites.
Jerome Anderson is one of them.
I had an identity crisis as a youth.
He served time in California for a homicide he committed in his 20s. His childhood was marked by tragedy. When Anderson was 5 years old, his sister was murdered. That, compounded by other challenges he faced, weighed on him.
I was a young African-American, skinny male in a predominantly Caucasian environment. And so I didn't look like a lot of my peers. And I had a speech impediment. And I was told I was stupid, I was slow. All these negative things that I heard from other people. And ultimately, I started telling them to myself. And so those type of distortions, thinking distortions, that definitely needed to have some cognitive reframing, restructuring.
Today, Jerome Anderson lives in Sacramento. He often returns to prison, this time voluntarily, to help incarcerated people work through self-awareness and healing practices. They rely on Counselor Robin Kasarjian's book, Houses of Healing, as a guide to help interrupt some of the forces that can fuel recidivism.
A fundamental shift in self-identity. That's what's really going to interrupt it. How do you come to experience yourself and see yourself in such a fundamentally different way?
She says that starts with asking the most basic question, who am I? Who prisoners believe they are, she says, informs their choices. Through self-reflection, a newfound identity comes into view. That's something Alvin Kimbrough says he witnessed several years ago when he was assigned a new cellmate.
The guy said, hey, man, you know, I know everybody thinks I'm a jerk, but I'm not. And he started to, you know, become extremely agitated and angry when he told me about how his father was murdered and how his mother was a prostitute and how he was sent to prison for 45 a life at 18 years old.
The cellmate had badly assaulted several other prisoners, so Kimbrough was being extremely cautious.
As he talked, he got to the point where he literally started crying. And at that point, I didn't understand, like tears. I didn't want to understand it because I was trying to build a hardness in me so I can survive the circumstances. But whatever was in me at that point, and I thank God for it, I didn't feel hostility towards him at all. And I reached over to this brother and I hugged him and I told him that, hey, man, we all we got.
For Kimbrough, it began a journey of personal transformation. It's why Robin Kasarjian calls houses of correction houses of healing. Kimbrough has since been released and now works as a traffic control specialist in California. He also volunteers at prisons with Jerome Anderson, who draws on his own transformation journey while incarcerated.
And I just said, I want to go back to being a kind person. I want to go back to being sensitive. And if I have to live the rest of my life in here, I just want to have my purpose back. I started putting positive words and affirmations in my mind every day.
When they are able to integrate these emotional regulation tools into their life, when they're able to begin to heal some of the trauma, they become themselves.
After release, ex-prisoners commonly face a range of legal and employment hurdles and sometimes intense stigma while attempting to re-enter society. But Kasarjan says the personal skills gained through the emotional work can reduce the risk of prisoners ending up back behind bars. For Here and Now, I'm David Freudberg.